This audio is brought to you by Muslim Central. Please consider donating to help cover our running costs and future projects by visiting www.muslimcentral.com/donate.
بسم الله والحمد لله والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم اللهم علمنا ما ينفعنا وانفعنا بما علمتنا وزدنا علما رب العالمين اللهم أعنا على ذكرك وشكرك وحسن عبادتك أما بعد. So remember when Ibn al-Qayyim رحمه الله he charted the progression of sin, right? So he said it begins with a look, and then a thought, and then into an act. So we talked about the look, the glance, and we'll come now to a really pivotal point in the progression of sin, which is the thought, or as he calls it, al-khatarat, the passing thought, kind of that weaker type of thought, just passes by. And whether you entertain it or not is up to you. And from that, action results. So he begins talking about it. And by the way, this is a really enlightening chapter. And I don't know if you're going to think that or not, but there's a lot in it if you think about it and if you study it. He says, وَأَمَّا الْخَطَرَاتُ فَشَأْنُهُ أَصْعَبُ. He says, when it comes to those thoughts, passing thoughts, he says, those are more critical. فَإِنَّهَا مَبْدَأُ الْخَيْرِ وَالشَّرِ. This is where good and bad begins. So that's its inception. And like these words are important because when you know the inception of evil, you can stop it at its beginning. Now the look, what it does, it plants an idea in your head, right? Here, you could take this. You can go here. You can eat that. But it is the thought, it is your mind that accepts or rejects. That's the beginning of moving towards or away. So, مَبْدَأُ الْخَيْرِ وَالشَّرِ. That's the beginning of good and evil. وَمِنْهَا تَتَوَلَّدُ الْإِرَادَاتِ. And it is from that, that resolve, determination, and will are generated. That's where it happens. When you decide to do something, it doesn't come without thought. Anything that is done comes with a thought behind it. And it's the thought that generates it. قَالَ فَمَنْ رَعَى خَطَرَاتِهِ. He says, if you are in control of your thoughts, you observe them, you guide them, rather than be guided by them, he says, then you are in control of yourself and your desire. You have subdued your hawa. You have subdued your desire. وَمَنْ غَلَبَتُ خَطَرَاتُهُ. فَهَوَهُ وَنَفْسُهُ لَهُ أَغْلَبُ. But he says, but if your thoughts are taking control of you, they overpower you, then of course your desire overpowers you even more. It says, if you are defeated in front of your thoughts, then your desire subdues you, overwhelms you even more than your thoughts. وَمَنْ يَسْتَهَانَ بِالْخَطَرَاتِ قَدَتْهُ قَهَرًا إِلَى الْهَلَكَاتِ. It is if you undervalue the importance of those thoughts and you do not restrain them, they are going to destroy you. So he says, وَلَا تَزَالُ الْخَطَرَاتُ تَتَرَدَّدُ عَلَى الْقَلْبِ حَتَّى تَصِيرَ مُنًا بَاطِلًا. He says, those passing thoughts continue to bombard the mind, frequent the mind until they become false wishes. And Ibn al-Qayyim here, when he's talking about thoughts, he is focusing in particular on thoughts that have to do with love and attraction. Because he's trying to answer a question about sin. And someone who is addicted to sin. And part of the sin that he may be referencing, and in fact he is referencing, is when someone is attracted to another person. And so he is infatuated, he's enslaved by his thoughts of wanting to be with them. So He's talking about this, but he's also talking about something bigger than that. So any thought that is false, if it keeps coming back, eventually becomes a false wish. Wishful, fantastical thinking that has no basis in reality. He says, as Allah Azza wa Jal says, كَسَرَابٍ بِقِيعَةٍ. It is like a mirage in a land, in a flat land. Then the thirsty person believes that it is something. Then when he goes to it, لَمْ يَجِدْهُ شَيْئًا, he finds it that it is nothing. وَوَجَدَ اللَّهَ عِنْدَهُ, he finds Allah over there, and Allah punishes him for his sins. So this is an image that Allah Azza wa Jal had put for the disbelievers. The disbelievers who think that what they're doing is right, that it is valid with Allah Azza wa Jal, or a person who thinks that he's worshipping Allah, but in fact he's directing his worship to somebody else. So he thinks that when he's going to meet Allah, he'll find something. Right? But when he meets Allah, he finds that he has nothing with Allah. And that's terrifying, right? You think you're going to meet Allah Azza wa Jal, then I'm going to find something. Why? Because I prayed and I fast. But whom did you pray to and fast for? Is it Allah or somebody else? So if you're doing this for somebody else, you're going to meet Allah Azza wa Jal, you say, Allah, I did this and this and this and that for you. Allah said, you didn't do it for me, you did it for somebody else. So you'll find nothing. So he says, this is like the mirage that a person who is thirsty in the desert sees it, he thinks it's water, keeps running to it. When he goes there, he finds that it's nothing. So he says, it's the same thing, a person who indulges in this fanciful thinking, wishes without basis. He says, he thinks that he is engaging in something, but in reality, it is nothing. قَالَ وَأَخَسُّ النَّاسِ هِمَّ وَأَوْضَعُهُمْ نَفْسًا. He says, the person with the lowest type of self, the most demeaned type of self, the most demeaned type of personality, let's say, is the one who is content with wishes instead of realities. So he brings these wishes, because he can't get that reality or not interested in that reality. He brings those wishes and he lives through wishful thinking. Okay? And if this is not clear, it will become clear, inshallah, what he's talking about and kind of the broader application of it. And he says, indeed, by Allah Azza wa Jalla, this type of thinking is the money of the bankrupt and the commerce of the idler. Meaning, the bankrupt, does he have money? But if he doesn't really want to work, what does he do instead? Dreams about being rich. One day I'll be rich, and if I'm rich, I'll buy this car, and I'll buy this house, and I'll marry this woman, and I'll travel to those areas. And he doesn't really want to work, but what does he want to live on? The fantasy of all of this. And that fantasy can actually make you smile and be happy as you imagine yourself doing these things, although you're not going to be doing these things. But you just live on that fantasy, right? So the one who's bankrupt lives off of that, wishes. The idler who doesn't really want to do any hard work, but he says, if I do hard work, then I will be this great doctor, and I'll be this great engineer, and people will respect me, and he's not planning on doing any of this, but he's just living off of what? The possibility and the fantasy of doing these things. Right? So he says, this is قُوتُ النَّفْسِ الْفَارِغَةِ التي قنعت من الوصل بزورة الخيال. He says, what? This is the sustenance of an empty soul that instead of being with someone, just imagines being with him. So he's here talking about someone who may be in love with another. That's the addiction. Addiction to fantasy. So he wants to be with another, but he cannot be with that person. So he just simply imagines being with them. Imagines going out with them, sleeping with them, imagine being married to them, having children with them, whatever it is. But he just imagines all of these things. And that seems to be sufficient for them. He living on that fantasy, on unreality, on imagination. He says this is troublesome. And he said, as the poet have said, أَمَنِيَّ مِنْ سُعْدَى رَوَاءً عَلَى الضَّمَى. He says, these wishes that I have about Su'da that can quench my thirst. And su'da quenched our thirst. سَقَتْنَا بِهَا سُعْدَ عَلَى ضَمَئٍ بَرْدَ. He says, I was thirsty and I got quenched by thinking about Su'da, just thinking about her. Munan in takun haqqan takun ahsan al-muna. He says, these wishes, if they are to come true, will be the best of wishes. But if not, wa illa faqad ishna biha zamanan raghda. But otherwise, if they were not to come true, we lived happy days with them. Just thinking about her. So he's saying, this is what? Foolish. Just simply contented with the fact that I'm just simply thinking about her, and if it happens, happens, and if not, at least I enjoyed thinking about her. He says, وَهِيَ أَضَرُّ شَيْءٍ عَلَى الْإِنسَانِ. He says, this is the most harmful thing that a human can encounter. And it comes from inability and laziness. Right? Where does it come from? Inability, you can't, and laziness. وَتُوَلِّدُ التَّفْرِيطَ وَالْحَسْرَةَ وَالنَّدَمِ. And it leads to negligence and sorrow and remorse. قال وَالْمُتَمَنِّي لِمَا فَاتَتْهُ مُبَاشَرَةُ الْحَقِيقَةِ بِجِسْمِهِ حَوَّلَ صُورَتَهَا فِي قَلْبِهِ. Says that this person who cannot do or attain that reality, and that reality is being with this woman, or this woman being with that man, or whatever it is, that thing that he wants. He cannot do what he wants with her, what she wants with him. So instead of that, they transform them into a fantasy in their head. And they will hug them, and they will kiss them, and will be around them, living that fantasy, just completely imaginary. And he says, this does not help. This is like someone who is hungry and thirsty, so he imagines in his head that there is food and water, and he consumes it in his head. He says, how does that help him? So he is talking about a sickness. When you are so in love with someone, you're living on the fantasy of being with them. And the more that you think about them, the more that it feeds that addiction to them, until it eventually kills you, because you can't live without them, right? And that's living in fantasy, and the application of this is not limited to what he's talking about. Because if you think about us today, a lot of us, because of inability or the way that society is, we're living in fantasy, right? Imagining that we are other people, living through other people. So think about fiction and think about video games. What do they do? Role-playing games, what do they do? So you may be unhappy with your life. You may want to do something with it, but for whatever reason, you decide not to. Or you grew up with those games. You grew up with those role-playing games. You grew up with reading that type of fiction. And that thing transports you into another person. So you go on a quest. And you're never going to go on a quest on your own, right? But you go on a quest to find the secret of A and B and C. You go fight enemies. You have accomplishments. You have friends. You have colleagues. You have accomplishments, but they are not real. They're only virtual. But you feed off of it. You feel that you've accomplished something. You play a game where you're shooting a lot of people and you have a high score and you feel that you've accomplished something. That is your avatar. That is your avatar. And you're living through the avatar. And it's not really your life. And you're not accomplishing anything. Right? And the avatar, by the way, right, that's a Sanskrit word that comes from the descent of the gods. So the gods, when they come into reality, they are the avatars. That's where that word comes from. So you're not living any real life. It's just imaginary. Or somebody who reads a lot of fiction, and I'm not saying that fiction per se is bad, but when you indulge in it to a degree that it dominates you, you start to live through that fiction, waiting for a life that mirrors or duplicates that fiction. Somebody will come and save you. Somebody will come and discover you. Somebody will come and see how great you are. Somehow you'll have a grade of ability, somehow coming out of nowhere, but you already always had it. And the world depends on you. And you're the only one who can save. And you can feed yourself that fantasy and live happily because of it. Detached from reality. So Ibn al-Qayyim, in a sense, is also saying about these things that they are absolutely harmful. You can't live in your head. You can't live based on fantasy. You have to live on reality. قَالَ وَالسُّكُونُ إلى ذلك واستجلابه يدل على خزاسة النفس ووضاعتها. He says, when you are comfortable with that and you invoke it, if you bring it to yourself, it indicates the weakness and the low status of that self. This is only happy with fantasy, not reality. So it runs away from reality by hiding into those fantasies. قال وإنما شرف النفس وزكاؤها وطهارتها وعلوها. He says the dignity of the soul and its elevation and its purification and its honor happens when you repel any thought that has no reality to it. And that is a very interesting observation. That is, if you want to be a good person, any thought that has no reality to it and will not lead to a benefit, you cleanse your mind of it. You remove it. وَلَا يَرْضَى أَن يُخْتِرَهَا بِبَالِهِ. You don't allow it entry into your mind and you will feel that you're above it. If it has no basis in reality, if you're just simply fantasizing about A, B, and C, and that is the sum of it, he says, you're not supposed to indulge in it. قَالَ ثُمَّ الْخَطَرَاتُ بَعْدُ أَقْسَامٌ تَدُورُ عَلَى أَرْبَعَةِ أُصُولٍ. He says, then these thoughts, after explaining all of this, are of four kinds. Thoughts that will bring the benefits of the dunya, or protect from the harms of the dunya, or will bring the benefits of the hereafter, or protect from the harms of the hereafter. He says, what you're going to be thinking about that is of value are four things. Two about the hereafter, two about the dunya. What about the hereafter? Thinking about what will benefit you in the hereafter. Thinking about how to protect yourself from harm in the hereafter. Then thinking about, in terms of the dunya, what will bring you benefit in the dunya or protect you from harm in the dunya. These are the four, he's saying. Worthwhile thoughts. He says, you should limit what you're thinking about to these four. And not think about anything else. So it brings you no benefit or it protects you from no harm. Why are you thinking about it? Why are you engaged in it? قال فإذا حصرت له فيها فما أمكن اجتماعه منها لم يتركه لغيره. He says, if these thoughts are harmonious, there's no conflict between them, then hold on to that. He says, but if there is conflict between them, then what you do is what? You put first, you prioritize the most important of them. So there is thinking about the dunya and thinking about the akhirah, and they are in conflict. At this moment, I'm going to pray. I can be thinking about the dunya, important things about the dunya, or the akhirah. At the moment of salah, what is the most important thing? The salah. So you put that first. So he says, sometimes there's conflict between even thinking about various things related to the akhirah, various things related to the dunya. Even when the dunya comes, it comes to the dunya. I have, let's say, for instance, I have to go to work right now. I have to talk to a friend. Both are important, but what is the more important of the two? You'll decide. So you put one ahead of the other. When it comes to the akhirah, okay, I could be reading Quran right now or helping somebody. I can read Quran anytime, but he needs help right now. Which one comes first? Is it helping him? So he says, thoughts are the same. And this is, by the way, this is high level thinking about thoughts. You understand? This is a heavy, important dose of how you could process thinking. So now you don't just let your mind think. You pause and you kind of stand above it and you say, what are you thinking about? And you tell it what to think about in terms of benefits and harms. And if you have a choice between two things, you choose the more important of the two. Right? So he says, you put the most important first and you prioritize it. And the one that is less important, you would leave it till later. He says, بَقِيَ قِسْمَانِ أَخَرًا. And as if this is not complicated enough, we're going to add two other sections. So he says, مُهِمٌ لَا يَفُوت وَغَيْرُ مُهِمٍ لَكِنَّهُ يَفُوت. He says, important, but there's no, it's not time sensitive. Meaning it will not expire. It's important, but it will not expire. And something less important, but it will expire. He says, which of the two you will put first? He says, this is when people get confused. Because If you do the important one, two things are in conflict. Important, but it will not expire. The other one is less important, but it will expire. Which one of the two will you do first? So he's saying here, rahimahullah, that is the cause of confusion, because if you do the more important one, the other thing will go away. And if you do the less important one, well, you've occupied yourself with the less important rather than the more important. He says, that is when you have to use your mind and have your kind of fiqh, your knowledge, your deep knowledge and understanding comes into play. وَمِنْهُ نَرْتَفَعَ مِنْ اِرْتَفَعَ وَأَنْجَحَ مَنْ نَجَحَ وَخَابَ مَنْ خَابَ. It says, it is here, at this juncture, is where those who are successful succeed and those who will fail will fail. Because they don't prioritize. قَالَ وَأَكْثَرُ مَنْ تَرَى مِمَّنْ يُعَظِّمُ عَقْلَهُ وَمَعْرِفَتَهُ يُؤْثِرُ غَيْرَ الْمُهِمِّ الَّذِي لَا يَفُوتُ عَلَى الْمُهِمِّ الَّذِي لَا يَفُوتُ. He says, and most of the whom you see who glorifies or prides himself on his intellect and knowledge, he will favor the unimportant that is not time sensitive, will not expire, over the important that will expire. وَلَا تَجِدُ أَحْدًا يَسْلَمُ مِنْ ذَٰلِكَ وَلَكِنَّهُ مُسْتَقِلٌ وَمُسْتَكْثِرٌ. And you'll find that no one, he says, no one will be safe from this, but some do a little bit and some do a lot of it. I don't know if you understand what he just said. Do you understand? He's saying, most of what you see who pride themselves on being smart and knowledgeable. First of all, how many people today, percentage-wise, pride themselves on being smart and knowledgeable? Give me a percentage. Yeah, percentage. I want percentages. 80%? No, come on, that's too low. 100%. 100%, I am sure of it, there are no exceptions. You will not meet a single person who will tell you, I don't know, or I'm not smart. You will not meet them. And if they do that, they're just trying to be humble. In themselves, everybody believes that they know. I'm going to leave maybe, you know, 0.5, 0.00, just for an exception. One in a thousand, one in a million. But otherwise, everybody believes that they are smart and everybody believes that they know, and not only know everything. That's why everybody talks about everything. Seldom do you find a person saying, well, I don't know much about this, I better not talk. Everybody will talk about everything. So he says, people who pride themselves on being this, yet you find that what they will put the unimportant things, and they have a lot of time to do them. They'll put that ahead of the important thing that expires. Not only in terms of action, but also in terms of thinking. He's talking about thinking, but also in terms of action. Yani, you'll delay your salah because you're on social media. Right? You will not read your Quran because you're on social media or you want to talk to your friends. That's just in terms of action. But think about it in terms of what you're thinking about. That's even more critical and less observed and less monitored than actions are. She's saying, how is it then they are intelligent and knowledgeable? So he says, nobody is safe from this, but some of them do a little bit of these mistakes, and some of them do a lot of them. قَالَ وَالتَّحْكِيمُ فِي هَذَا الْبَابِ لِلْقَاعِدَةِ الْكُبْرَ الَّتِي عَلَيْهَا مَدَارُ الشَّرْعِ. It says, what organizes all this, what should kind of govern all of this, is that there is a major principle in the Sharia, whom Allah Azza wa Jal had made it the principle, is in His revelation, in His commands, and also the principle in people's life, in Qadr. This is how they're supposed to live, and also in His command. And that principle is what? Is that if you have two benefits, and they are in contradiction, you cannot do both at the same time, you advance or prioritize the greater benefit. And if there are two harms, and you have to do one of them, then you do the less of the two harms. So the lesser of the two harms is to be done to avoid the bigger harm. And the greater of the two benefits is to be done so that you will get the greater benefit, even though you have to sacrifice a smaller benefit. So an example, somebody is praying and you find someone who's going to fall into a hole. fall to his death, do you keep your salah or do you go and help him? You go and help him. But you just cut your salah. Isn't that harmful? You say yes. There's maslaha, there's benefit in continuing to pray, isn't it? Definitely. But where's the greater benefit? Saving his life. So you sacrifice the lower benefit for the greater benefit. Right? So that's just an example. So whenever there's a clash, and that requires fiqh, whenever there's a clash, you say, where is the greater benefit? You do that. If there's a clash between two bad things, which is the lesser evil? Like voting in an election, right? What is the lesser evil? I say, I vote for him, but I'll do that. Because the other one is way too horrible, so I'll do this guy. And then after 4 years, you switch again. So that's it, the lesser harm, right? فَخَطَرَةُ الْعَقْلِ وَفِكْرِهِ لَا تَتَجَاوَزُ ذَلِكَ So it says your thoughts, do not go beyond this, beyond the fact that they have benefits and they are harms, and if there's a clash, put the greater benefit and then the lesser harm. قَالَ وَأَعْلَى الْفِكَرِ وَأَجَلُّهَا وَأَنْفَعُهَا مَا كَانَ لِلَّهِ وَالدَّارِ الْآخِرَةِ It says the best of thoughts and the most beneficial are what belongs to Allah Azza wa Jal and the next life, الدار الآخرة, the last day. فَمَا كَانَ لِلَّهِ فَهُوَ أَنْوَعُ He says there are thought divisions or kinds of thoughts that are to Allah Azza wa Jal, that please Allah, that are about Him subhanahu wa ta'ala. قَالَ الْفِكْرَةُ فِي آيَاتِهِ الْمُنَزَّلَةِ He says contemplating His revealed ayahs, meaning the Qur'an and sunnah by extension, and comprehending them and understanding what Allah intends from them. And that's why Allah Azza wa Jal revealed them, not simply to read them, but reading them is a means. Ibn al-Qayyim here is talking. So I want you kind of remember this for later. قَالَ بَعْضُ السَّلَفِ Some of the Salaf have said, Allah Azza wa Jal revealed the Qur'an so that it would be implemented. So they've converted reading it into its implementation. Right? And that's profound. That's profound. And I'll explain it, but that's really profound. So, Al-Fudayl ibn Uyad here is saying what? He said, Allah Azza wa Jal revealed the Qur'an for it to be implemented. For you to practice it. To do what it's asking you to do and stay away from what it's asking you to stay away from. What is the way for you to do this? It says reading it and memorizing it. So here it is. That's the chain. Allah revealed it. You read it and you memorize it. To do what with it? Implement it. That. So the second phase is a means. Is a step that you have to go towards the end. And the end is that implementation. So he says what people did is that they scratched the last one, the implementation, and moved it into reading it. So the implementation is the reading. Nothing else. Right? The implementation became the reading. And it's nothing else. So he says, what is your relationship with the Quran? I read it. And then what? That's it. That's the work associated with the Quran. The last phase has been cancelled. So this is why, like, when you're reading the Qur'an, and this is will be incredibly transformative if you remember it. When you're reading the Qur'an, why are you reading it? Just to finish it. So the tilawa became the amal. Even though the tilawa, reading it, is honorable. It's rewardable. It's ibadah. Right? But Allah made it ibadah for a reason. Why did Allah make it that? Why did Allah reward you for reading the Qur'an? Just to simply read it? Or because you are going to get something from that reading is so that you could be changed by it. And so you could change others with it. But when you don't understand what you're reading in that page and then the next one and that juz and you finish the Quran and you don't really understand what you have read, not because the language is an obstacle, but your mind is somewhere else. You're not interested in getting from it, anything from it. It's like you don't understand a student who's studying for an exam. You don't really care what the book says. You're just studying for that exam, waiting for the exam to be done so that you could just forget everything that you've read. You don't want to learn anything from it. So when you're reading that page from the Quran, you're not looking for answers. You're not looking for lessons. You're not looking for transformation. You're looking for the end of the page so that you could just close the Mus'haf. So that becomes what? The reading becomes the action. But Allah is saying that's not why it was revealed. The reading and the memorization becomes what? A means, wasila. You don't stop with the wasila. You have to move into the end. And so that's why you kind of find us today celebrating the wasila, but ignoring the end. So-and-so memorized the Quran. Alhamdulillah, that's great. In itself, that's an accomplishment. Okay, but then what? There's a Quran competition. Beautiful voices here and there. Great. But then what? So you celebrate the Quran, you venerate the Quran, just simply of what? Listening to beautiful melodies and recitations, but there's no implementation. You need to push into the last part. So he says here, al-fikr, thinking about the ayahs of Allah Azza wa Jal, is the top level of thinking. Then he said, al-fikratu fi ayatihi al-mashhuda, he says, contemplating the ayahs that are created, the observable, perceptible ayahs of Allah Azza wa Jal, the sky, the sun, the moon. And that is again transformative if a person were to actually accept it. So as you're driving, as you're walking, and you're looking around, you stop to actually think about what you're seeing. Rather than be drowning in your own negative thoughts, you stop whatever you're thinking about, and you think about Allah's creation. And you learn from it. And he says, وَالِاسْتِدْلَالُ بِهَا, and learning from it about the names of Allah and His attributes and His wisdom and His graciousness and His generosity. So this feeds your faith. And he says, Allah Azza wa Jal had recommended that type of tafakkur, contemplation, and criticized the heedless who turn away from Allah's ayahs. And then he says the third type of thinking that Allah Azza wa Jal loves, or it's about Allah Azza wa Jal, he says thinking about Allah's, not rewards, but His, what He had gifted, what He had blessed us with, in terms of different ni'ams, as His mercy and His forgiveness and forbearance and patience. He says these three, so thinking about the Quran, thinking about the ayahs of Allah that He had created, thinking about the ni'mah that Allah Azza wa Jal had bestowed and had given, he says these three will plant in the heart the love of Allah Azza wa Jal, knowledge of Allah and His love and His hope. وَدَوَامُ الْفِكْرَةِ فِي ذَلِكَ مَعَ الْذِكْرِ يَصْبِغُ الْقَلْبَ فِي الْمَعْرِفَةِ وَالْمَحَبَّةِ صِبْغَةً تَامَّةً. He says, and if you continue to think like that, combine that also with the dhikr of Allah Azza wa Jal, that will soak the heart, will coat the heart with knowing Allah and loving Him completely. So where does that come from? Using your mind. So it's using your mind with dhikr. So he says, if you think like this, so this is directed intentional thought. You're not just sitting thinking about whatever comes to your mind. No, it's an intentional thought about what benefits you. And you understand what benefits you. So he'll say, I'll begin thinking about the Quran. I'll look at Allah's creation. I'll investigate all the ni'mah that Allah had given me. And I will learn from it about Him subhanahu wa ta'ala. And you continue to remember Allah. He says, this will transform you and will soak that heart in Allah's love. Right? Then he says, the fourth one, which is a beneficial type of thought. Al-fikratu fi uyubi nafsi wa afatiha wa fi uyubi al-amal. He says, to contemplate and ponder the faults of the self and its diseases and the faults of what you have done. Meaning your own mistakes, your own deficiencies. And he says, this is extremely beneficial. So what he wants to hear from, to do, is not to simply be aware of what other people are doing or are not doing, and least aware of yourself and its own deficiencies. He says, no, turn your attention, your gaze, your mind into yourself and think about what is missing from you. What do you have that is fine, but also that what you don't have? What is missing from you? In terms of character, in terms of ibadah, in terms of the thoughts that come into your mind, in terms of your willingness or unwillingness to obey Allah Azza wa Jalla. So think about all of this. And when you discover your own deficiency, it will humble you. Beyond people's praise, beyond the appearance of salah, the appearance of worship, he says, what lies deep? and what is missing from it. For instance, you know, I prayed Dhuhr, I prayed Asr, I prayed Isha, I prayed this, I prayed that. How much of your mind was present while will you pray? Was it for Allah Azza wa Jal, or did the intention shift to other than Allah? When you were asked to obey Allah Azza wa Jal in this, when it came, for instance, for sadaqah or helping people, why did you decline? Why did you retreat? Why did you hesitate? Why are you quick to disobey? Slow to obey. Investigate. Right? Investigate. He says, when you do this, it will break the self in you that commands evil. That ferocious self, that greedy self, that conceited self, that selfish self. He says, when you investigate the self like that, it will break it. And when that happens, the other self, which is al-mutma'inna, nafsu al-mutma'inna, the contented, secured, faithful self, he says, then it will thrive. وَصَارَ الْحُكْمُ لَهَا. It will govern. Then the heart will be alive. So he says, thinking about your own deficiency helps a lot. And he says the fifth, الْفِكْرَةُ فِي وَاجِبِ الْوَقْتِ وَوَظِيفَتِهِ. He says to think about the duty, the immediate duty that you're supposed to be engaged in. وَجَمْعُ الْهَمِّ عَلَيْهِ. And then focusing on it. What are you supposed to do at the moment? Not to be trapped by the past or the future. What is my responsibility now? قَالَ فَالْعَارِفُ إِبْنُ وَقْتِهِ. He says, the knowledgeable, the wise, is the son of his time. Or he lives in the moment, if you want to paraphrase it. He lives in the moment. But he doesn't mean by it what people mean by it today. The son of his time, or who lives in his moment. Today means what? Oh, don't worry about the future. Now just live in the moment. Don't think about consequences. Do whatever. What pleases you now. So that's used what? To unrestrained pleasure. Without consequence. That's not what he means. You're son of this, of your moment, or you live in the moment, meaning what? In terms of what benefits you later. But focus on what are your obligations at this moment. So what is your obligation at this moment? It's salah. Don't think about something else then. Don't bring anything else from the past and the future. Focus on what you have to do today. What is your obligation today? Let's suppose, for instance, that you're a student. Focus on that obligation now. Finish that obligation now. In terms, of course, of the benefits that you want from it in the future and the mistakes that you learned from in your past, but you don't be trapped by this or by that. You focus on what you're supposed to do now, and you gather all of your energy in what you're supposed to do at this moment. So it's time to go to salah, you go to salah. Don't be distracted by anything else. Time for the Quran, you do the Quran. Don't be distracted by anything else. So he asks, what does Allah want from me at this moment? What is open? What is available? What is the obligation? It's time to help your parents, you focus on that. You don't put anything else ahead of it. And here he's talking not about action, he's talking about thought again. But even what you're thinking about, he's saying, think about what benefits you now. Not fantasy. Not what may happen or may not happen decades in the future. No, no, focus on what you're supposed to do at this moment to change your reality, to be better, to earn Allah's pleasure. Don't delay it. That's your obligation at this moment. So he is the son of his moment, or he lives in the moment. It's because if he wastes his time, he wastes all of his benefits. If he loses his time, he loses all of his benefits. قَالَ فَجَمِيعُ الْمَصَالِحِ إِنَّمَا تَنْشَأُ مِنَ الْوَقْتِ وَإِنْ ضَيَّعَهُ لَمْ يَسْتَدْرِكُهُ أَبَدًا. He says, all of your benefits, they actually come from taking advantage of the time that you have. And if you lose this, you will not be able to retrieve it. Like, all your benefits in the Akhirah, where do they come from? Taking advantage of the time that Allah had given you now. Right? So, okay, waste it. Okay, get yesterday back. Done. Get your youth back. Get your childhood back. No, never will come back. So he says, this is your principle. This is the most valuable, your silver and gold that Allah had given you to trade with. If you waste it, you're not going to have anything. You just completely lost it. So this is your time. You take advantage of it then you are blessed. If you waste it, it's absolutely gone. Every minute of it is gone, and it will never come back. قال الشافعي صحبت الصوفية فلم أستفد منهم سوى حرفين. He says, Shafi'i, he said, I kept the companies of the Sufis and I only learned from them two things, only two or two things or two statements, two beneficial things from them. أحدهما, one of them is الوقت سيف. Time is like a sword. If you do not cut it, it will cut you. And he mentioned the other one, which is what? نفسك إن لم تشغلها بالحق وإلا شغلتك بالباطل. He says, and yourself, if you do not preoccupy it with the truth, it will distract you with falsehood. And there's maybe a third one mentioned in other places. قال ومن العصمة ألا تجد. Part of Allah's protection for you is for you to be unable, right? Or for you not to have, right? Like, you want to do something and you simply can't. They say that is from isma, Allah's protection from you. Like, I don't have the money to do this. Yeah, there's a reason. You're being what? Protected. I cannot do this. I wish I could do this, but I can't do it. Why? That's min al-isma. Allah's protecting you. Right? So, first of all, right, let's try to understand this. When a Shafi'i is saying, I kept the companies of the Sufis and I've only learned from them two things, because people will debate this. Is this praise or criticism? Right. So if a person is pro-Sufi, what will they say? A pro-Sufi. Praise. If they like the Sufis, they'll say what? Of course he's praising them. These are great things. Right? So if a person hates the Sufis, what will they say? He's criticizing them, right? Now, I just want you to think on your own first, for a minute. If you just hear that phrase, I've kept the company of so-and-so, I've only learned from him two things. Is that typically praise or criticism? Criticism. Criticism. Typically, right? Like the phrasing, you wouldn't say that about someone that you've learned a lot from. Like, it's just limited. I only learned two things or three things from him. Whereas if you really like someone, you wouldn't diminish it into just two. So that is what, you may object, right? But let me continue. That is what, because I'm going to lean towards criticism. That's criticism. That's not praise. Now, why? That's it. Because the phrasing itself indicates it's praise. It's criticism. Second, there are other phrases or statements from a Shafi'i where he is critical of the Sufis. Yani in Talbis Iblis, he's critical of them. Now, you may agree with him, disagree with him, that's something else, but I'm trying to clarify the position of a Shafi'i with regards to Sufism. Because there will be people who will say, no, this is praise. But no, there are other statements of a Shafi'i where he is not in favor of them, right? Like one of them is, if I remember, you could find this in Talbis Iblis by Ibn al-Jawzi, rahimahullah. It says, if a person becomes a Sufi in the morning, by the afternoon, he's foolish and he's lost his mind. Something like this. Now, you may say, well, he didn't really look at the proper Sufis, maybe this, maybe that. It doesn't matter. I'm just trying to clarify what a Shafi'i is saying. Third, is that though these things are really powerful, like all these statements are really deep and powerful, but you could even get them from non-Muslims, right? يعني الوقت كالسيف. You know, time is like the sword. If you don't take advantage of it, it will kill you. A non-Muslim can tell you that easily, right? Like today, a psychologist on TikTok, on Instagram, tells you this. If you don't take advantage of your time, it will destroy you. It's a very simple truth, profound. But there's nothing particularly unique about it. Or for instance, if you don't preoccupy yourself with something good, yourself will destroy you, preoccupy you with falsehood. A non-Muslim can tell you this. A lot of non-Muslims can tell you this. So there's nothing particularly profound about this, that it would be a statement of praise and glorification. Nonetheless, because Ibn al-Qayyim does not explain whether it was praise or criticism, let's at least understand these, right? So that we reinforce what Ibn al-Qayyim was trying to say. So, This time is like a sword. If you don't cut it, it kills you. So if you do not take advantage of your time, what it will do to you? Destroy you. Because it's empty. It will finish you off. Because it's just simply empty. And when it's empty like this, it's a killer. You'll go after what harms you rather than what benefits you. That's its destruction. And when you find people becoming addicted to alcohol, drugs, and many of other these addictions, one of the rising addictions is gambling, right? So why do people get addicted to it? Because there's nothing else to do. So they do this. So they need to fill their time with anything. So that is the killer. And also, نفسك إن لم تشغلها بالحق, yourself, if you do not use it in something good, then it will take you to evil. That's absolutely true. If you're not doing halal, you're doing what? Haram. It's a rule. If you're not obeying Allah, then you're obeying somebody else. And that somebody else is not good for you to obey. That's how it is. That's how it works. So if you don't take care of yourself, just like a child, if you don't discipline that child, and I don't mean here being strict and cruel on any of this, but rather one give them opportunities, right, to learn and to excel. If you do not discipline that child, what happens is that they'll grow up what? Lawless. Huh? And they will be of no benefit to themselves or anybody else. That's yourself. You don't discipline it. You don't restrain it. You don't take care of it. It will destroy you. So you have to be in control of it, not the other way around. قال فوقت الإنسان هو عمره في الحقيقة. He says, the time that you have is really your age. And it is what supplies your eternal life in the next one, in the next life. And it is what will supply the time of your punishment if you were to be punished. And it passes quicker than the clouds. So what supplies your eternal bliss in heaven? It is your time here. That's how you buy it. And what supplies punishment in the grave and in hellfire? It is your time here. So how you use it will send you either here or will send you over there. So preserving this time is essential. And it comes from, actually goes back all to preserving your thoughts. Now, I'll just finish this part, inshallah, and then I'll repeat it again next week, iznillah. قَالَ فَمَا كَانَ وَقْتُهُ لِلَّهِ وَبِاللَّهِ فَهُوَ حَيَاتُهُ وَعُمْرُهُ. It says, if you are living, or if your time, or whatever time you spend, is لله, for Allah Azza wa Jal, وَبِاللَّهِ, seeking Allah's assistance. So it is for Allah, and seeking Allah's assistance to do what Allah wants, he says, this is your true life and this is your true age. And otherwise is not counted as part of your life. Is not counted as part of your age. And if you live like that, meaning the otherwise, you're living like an animal. So your real life is what? What you're doing? You're living for Allah's sake, seeking Allah's help. He says, that's your real life. Anything outside of this is living like an animal. Meaning to do what? To eat and drink and sleep. Drink and eat and sleep, repeat. Drink and eat and sleep, repeat. That's what you're doing. And you're aging as long as this is happening, and then you eventually die. He says, this is living like an animal. But if you're living for Allah and by Allah, that's your real life. So he says, if he spends his life, if he's the kind of person who spends his life in ghafla, heedlessness, and desire, and wishful, false thinking, I mean things that will never happen, and the best thing that he's doing is sleeping and sitting idle, it's just better for him to die then. And he's not an invitation for people to end their lives, or for actually for them to die, but he is an invitation for you to think, why are you living if you're just simply living like this? Which is what? Doing nothing. Where the best that you're doing is when you go to sleep. Right? The best that you're doing is when you go to sleep. And some of us, and I'm not really criticizing here, some of us somehow, yani we are, sometimes we'll be at that stage in life where the only thing that we want to do is just sleep. He says, then why are you living like this? Meaning there's better living than this. That's not real living. If the only thing that you're doing is just, let's say, playing video games, because this is the modern version of what he's talking about. It's just simply playing video games and fantasizing about being great somehow and somewhere in the future, doing nothing about it, and then going to bed and waking and then eating and then going to bed and doing these things in a cycle, trapped. He says, then is this your life and is this the best that you can do? Definitely not. Allah did not give you this time that energy, those skills for you to waste them on this. So you don't want to be living like an animal and you don't want to be living like a dead person. قَالَ وَإِذَا كَانَ الْعَبْدُ He says, if a person, while he's in the salah, does not earn anything from it, it's not counted for him, except if he is cognizant, aware about what he's saying, your age is the same thing. Your age is not yours unless that part of it that you spend to Allah intentionally with awareness, that is your age. The rest is not yours, just like salah. And when you prayed Isha, when you pray Fajr, how much of that was yours? How much of that was yours? Like when you meet Allah Azza wa Jalla, you say, I prayed this Fajr on this particular day in December. I prayed Isha this particular night in December. How much of it was yours? You may get 5%. The rest 95%, where were you? Somewhere else, thinking about something else. Something about food, going home, oh, it's too cold, somebody said this to me. Everything goes into your head. But only 5% is yours. He says, then that salah is only 5%. That other salah is only 10%. This other salah is only 1%. This other salah is zero. There's nothing. He says, so your age is what? Your age is the same. How old are you? And this is for those who think that they're old, now you can pretend to be young. How old are you? Maybe I'm 5 years. 5 years in terms of what? That's what really counted. And when you meet Allah Azza wa Jalla, how old are you? 2 years. Like all that I've done that is worthwhile is 2 years. This is how old you are. Another person, 3 years. Another person, 4 years. Where's the rest 60? I don't know. I don't know where it went. I don't really know where it went. Half of it is in sleep. The other half I was working. The other half is... And I'm not saying that stop working. Right? I'm saying what? The part that is for Allah Azza wa Jalla, let it count. At least, right? Let it count. And then we go into what? You can make your work ibadah. You could work your sleep ibadah. All your life could be ibadah. But at least let the part that is supposed to be to Allah or for Allah, let that part count so that it is for you. Not empty it as well of all that is beneficial. Right? So there's more, inshallah, to say about that particular part which is thought. I will leave that, inshallah, to next week, inshallah, Rabbil Alameen. Inshallah, let me know, inshallah, if you have questions. I'll give it to you, inshallah. And I'm going to try, by the way, I'm going to try to access the online questions. If I'm unable to, forgive me, inshallah, I will try next week to answer your questions. But if I can, I will do it, inshallah. Tafaddal, tafaddal. Naam. So your point, inshallah, about the statement of Imam Shafi'i rahimahullah is that if the points that he have mentioned are really important, are really of high quality, then that could be praised because it doesn't matter about the number, but the benefit. Sah? Okay, inshallah. Jazakallah khair. So at least I've shared your perspective, inshallah. My sister dislikes me for whatever reason. Should I reply with kindness if no real issue arises? Yes. I mean, as long as you can, if there are family members who may have issues with you and may not be the nicest to you, always, and as a strategy, itfa' billati hiya ahsan. Reply, push back with the best. Push back with the best. And that will bring the best outcome. Bi'inillah Azza wa Jalla. It could transform that person. So just use it as a strategy. So whenever a person is cruel, bad, terrible to you, especially initially, do your best. Do your best with them. Not the worst, but the best. And keep doing that until such a point where you realize that, you know what, it's not working. Right? And then you could change your approach. But in the beginning, and especially if it's family, and especially if it's a sister that close to you, then kindness, and keep kindness as a strategy and as your reply, bi-idhnillah azza wa jal. Yeah, go ahead. Wa alaykum as-salam. So you want to reach the stage. How can I reach the stage where I have this nafsul mutma'inna, the contented, assured, comfortable soul, where I'm not struggling with thoughts in ibadah? So it's almost unattainable to say that a person could not struggle with thoughts in ibadah. They could decrease. But for them to stop, for the waswasa to completely stop, no, it can't happen. But what you can do is that you could be first in control of your own thoughts. So rather than straying left and right, you discipline yourself and you train it not to engage in anything else in salah except Allah Azza wa Jal, except focusing on what the salah wants from you. And that comes with practice, comes with dua, comes with focus on the salah, comes with understanding what someone is saying in the salah, comes with desiring outcomes from that salah. So when I go into it, what do I want out of it? So I want tuma'nina, assurance. I want an answer to my dua. I want relief from problems. I want increase in my iman. So you deposit these intents, these goals in the salah, and you try to achieve them as you are praying, focusing on the individual parts of salah and being absorbed in them. When you do this and you ask Allah Azza wa Jal for it, then the distractions will shrink significantly, right? And your benefit that you get from the salah will increase significantly. You will never reach a stage where there will be no thoughts at all, no distractions at all, no whispers at all. Because the shaitan is always there and the self is always there. But you can minimize it. So this is how you do it. You do it with dua and concentration and focus. And with time, inshallah, kind of you graduate. It's like a muscle that you train. So you train your mind, and then eventually your mind actually will listen to you. Barakallahu fik. Okay. Anyone else, or we finish, inshallah? Okay. Alaykum as-salam. Barakallahu fik. Okay, so what I grabbed from what you're saying is that you've heard that someone saying that if you try to follow the meaning of the recitation, it could be a trap of shaitan because that is distracting, right? And so in points of, let's say, where there is a pause, there's a pause, you say, in the jalsa as you're sitting, maybe between the sujood or what have you, you can think about what you've just read. Now we say, no, in fact, you're supposed to think about what you are reading as you are reading it. So you'd find, for instance, that the Prophet ﷺ, at times he would be reading and crying, or reading and repeating an ayah. Some of the salaf will do that. They'll repeat an ayah over and over and over, indicative of thinking about what they are reading. So if you delay it, then you've actually dislodged, right, what you're supposed to do elsewhere by inserting something else there. So the melody of the Quran, again, it's a means. The melody is not intended in itself. That's why it assists you, but it shouldn't trap you. So the melody allows me to appreciate, to love the Quran, kind of to beautify the Quran, but what is the Quran saying through that melody? That's what you're going to dive deep into. That's what you want to get. So as the Quran is being read, you're extracting this from the meanings, and then as you move into ruku' and into sujood, you're thinking about the glorification of Allah Azza wa Jalla and what you are saying in that moment. Repeat that again.
A friend of mine just sent me that question. She has a sister, she converted to Islam.
Like she has a sister who converted to Islam.
3 years back. So she's in a relationship, but not yet alive. A Muslim guy who the sister requests to do nikah, but the guy refuses. What advice do you give to the sister who converted and is now sworn to Islam, so he's trying to hang off on to this gentleman who's already a Muslim?
So the question is about, and I've received a written question, inshallah, I'll read it. So the question here is about a sister who converted to Islam 3-4 years ago, and she is in a relationship with a Muslim man, and the Muslim man refuses to marry her. She wants to marry him, but he refuses to marry her, and they have 4 children. So if he refuses to marry her, then she leaves him. She doesn't stay, right? She doesn't stay. She realizes, though, that she's been with him for a while now, and she has children with him, that he's not the right person for her. He may have been the right person at one point before her Islam, but now, as a Muslim, he's not the right person for her. And maybe her deciding to leave will prompt him to change and do the right thing and marry her. But if not, she should not regret it. And she should know that Allah Azza wa Jalla will give her something better, because she should do what pleases Allah Azza wa Jalla, despite, and I understand how difficult this is, especially that she has children. But if she is strong enough, and for her to be that strong, she needs Muslims around her who will support her. So if she has that base, she has that support, it'll be easier to do. But I tell her that it's not going to be easy, but eventually it will be much better for her. Because Allah Azza wa Jalla will give her better than what she leaves, if she leaves it for his sake, right? Now this is an important question. Let me just answer this. Is it, do you get held accountable for having negative thoughts about Allah, the deen, and others, yourself, if you disagree with it? This is due to having extreme waswasa, and you're fighting these thoughts, and they're causing you anxiety. So no. Emphatically, no, you are not responsible for these thoughts, especially if you are experiencing, as you said, waswasa and anxiety. So as long as we are struggling with these thoughts, Allah Azza wa Jalla does not hold you responsible for them, because you hate them, right? That's why you're fighting them. You did not accept them. You realize that they are wrong. And some of us have extreme cases of this waswasa anxiety, and others don't. And others are fine now, but may not be fine in 2-3 years from now. Allah Azza wa Jalla knows the best. But if a person experiences anything like this, don't be distraught or demoralized because of it, just because a bad thought is in your head. And when we're going to talk, inshallah, next week, if we live till next week, about the thoughts, I'll address this, because he will be talking about thoughts and emptying your brain of thoughts, and how does this work, its benefits, harms. I'll talk about these negative thoughts, but we didn't come to it today. But as long as you hate them, you're fighting them, you're fine, and you have to believe that you're fine. If bad thoughts come in your head about Allah Azza wa Jalla and you say, A'udhu Billah, are you responsible for it? No, it's waswasa. And shaitan is just trying to mess with you, to upset you, to anger you, to sadden you. So forget it. And you shouldn't indulge these thoughts. You have to recognize that they are coming from shaitan. How do you know? And I'm going to address this inshallah next week. How do you know that these thoughts are not you? It's because you hate them. You're fighting them. You know, so you have bad thoughts about the deen or other people or yourself. Well, that tells you that it's not coming from you. It's coming from somebody else, right? So dismiss them first as coming from an alien source, and that is source of the shaitan. So it's not you. And if you don't engage them, if you don't entertain them, they do not harm you. So dismiss them. And invoke Allah Azza wa Jalla. You want to add something? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you had Harry's hand. La bas, inshallah. So, and know that Allah Azza wa Jalla will assist you. Allah Azza wa Jalla will assist you with these thoughts. So I don't want you to give up just because you're experiencing this, and know that this is temporary, because you probably have had a time when you did not experience these things, right? So I want you to remember that time and imagine a time bi-idhnillah azza wa jal when these thoughts will go away and you will go back to the way that you were. So it happens. It's just simply like physical sickness. You'll go through a period of pain and then will end bi-idhnillah azza wa jal. So think about that, fight it, ask Allah for assistance, know that this is not you. And don't worry about it. That's what I want you. Do not worry about it. Don't let this cause you anxiety. There is no reason for that. Just coming from the shaitan, a'udhu billahi min the shaitan rajim, get over it. Right? That's it. Allah. Tafadhal. Labas.
Can we say there are two types of suvidam? One which deviates from the right path and two of bid'ah and maybe worshipping the awliya. That type of sufism is negative. Can we say there's another one which is positive? The person knows the religion, but with the fiqh and from the Sahaba until now, there were some kind of people who were more spiritual, like Abidar al Ghafari, for example, Hassan al Basri, for example, or maybe Imam al Baghdadi. So can we say that there are two types of
sufism? No. So Abdullah is saying, he says, can we say that there are two types of Sufis? On the one hand, Sufis that are deviant, who kind of worship the saints and do bad things, right? They mentioned other examples or not?
Yeah, yeah.
That they worship the awliya or they do things that are, you know, extreme. And they don't really know much about fiqh, about sharia, about the religion, right? So they deviate significantly from it. And other types of Sufis who are bound by the sharia, bound by the fiqh, they follow it, and they're just simply more spiritual. So can we say this? This is, I mean, you will see in the books of Ibn Taymiyyah and Ibn al-Qayyim, he will say that among the Sufis there are good ones and bad ones, right? Good ones and bad ones. What matters at the end is not the name, but what the person does, what the person believes, right? So he'll say that there are some of the Sufis who will be bound by the sharia. He'll mention, for instance, people like Al-Junayd, right? And he will praise him. He'll praise a person like Al-Junayd. So people who are like that, who are spiritual, but at the same time, what? They're bound by the sharia. They'll say, you know, whatever we say is bound by the Quran and Sunnah. Anything that we say, we may say. This could be a mistake. Anything that we say that is outside of that, don't take it, they'll say. So that's praiseworthy, right? So it doesn't matter as much the name, as much as what the person is doing. And if they're doing is right, within the bound of the Quran and Sunnah, then yeah, that's fine, inshallah. Tafadhal, inshallah. Is just reacting to the ayah, and then you're worried about the consequence of that ayah and what may happen. No. If you are reacting to the ayah and it's really affecting you, it's deeply affecting you and moving you, and you're thinking about it and its consequences and what could come from it and how we should change because of it, that's part of learning from the Quran, inshallah. So I don't think that's a distraction or playful thinking, Allah. Khair, inshallah. So we'll pause here, inshallah. We'll see you بإذن الله عز وجل next week. بإذن الله سبحانك اللهم وبحمدك أشهد أن لا إله إلا أنت أستغفرك وأتوب إليك الحمد لله رب العالمين.